I hope that you'll forgive the sexist translations in the Machzor. The conservative movement has published a Sidur that has removed most of the references to God as a male. Not all, not yet. I'm sure the new edition, whenever it comes out, will do that. Interestingly enough, the Reform movement has just published, or is publishing, a new Sidur, the first time in 30 years. And theirs will include only sex-free language, only gender-free language. And they'll be following the footsteps of the Reconstructionist movement and the Renewal movement and all the other movements. But we'll follow behind them as we usually do. And I look forward to the day when our references to God are no longer in that male-dominated mode. I think that's important not just for women to feel an equal place in the synagogue. I think it's important also to help us rid ourselves of the image of God as a person, as a man in the sky with a big beard who's with some sort of a magic wand, deciding what one thing or another that happens in our fate. For us to be able to grow up and see ourselves as adults, we have to no longer see God through the eyes of a child. It's also particularly important because, as you saw, we had one young man come up to the Bima, but we had two young ladies. Rachel and Zoe were standing there. Their parents opened the ark. They're the ones that took the first cup from the Kiddush. And the reality is that as we've liberated ourselves from the stereotypes of a male-oriented and dominated image of God, we are also seeing and witnessing a great influx of women in leadership roles in Jewish life. As women rabbis, women cantors, women presidents, women board members, chair people of ritual committees, and on and on. So the time has come for us to move in that direction, and so that's why I apologize for the fact that our Machzor, although it's a relatively new edition, still has a long way to go. If we were to ask ourselves, what story in the entire Bible would little Rachel and Zoe find most interesting as their parents begin to tell them Bible stories? The answer would be the one that reminds them of the little thing, of that, not so little, but of that little toy, so to speak, that almost every parent, certainly every Jewish parent, puts in the crib when the children are that age and younger. And what is that? What's the toy? What's the symbol? Noah's Ark. That's the kids' favorite story. Ask their parents. Ask them. When the children grow up, that's the story that they connect with most. An ark in a sea of water reminds them of their bathtub. The animals marching up reminds them of all of the little stories that they hear about mice and bears and cats and dogs and so on, and they feel a tremendous affinity to that story. But I want to share with you that I learned this year that story of the ark and Noah and the rain dissipating and Noah and his family being able to go out on dry land actually is a story for Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, it's a story for Rosh Hashanah. The actual quotation of the Torah reads like this, and then you'll understand.
It came to pass on the 601st year since the creation of the world, in the first month, on the first day of that month, that the waters were dried up from the earth. And Noah removed the covering that was over the ark and looked out, and behold, the face of the ground had dried from the rain. One of the great Talmudic sages, Rabbi Eliezer, is quoted in the Talmud as saying, Zohi Tishrei. The day that the rain subsided and the earth became dry, and Noah was able to go out of the ark with all of the animals as well as his family, was
the first day of the month of Tishrei. What day is that? Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah.
What is Rabbi Eliezer's point? Anybody can read that this in the first day of the first month of the year, it's Tishrei. So what? Why does he feel that there's some significant connection with the month of Tishrei? And it was left to one of the students of Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the great, great head of the Academy of Yeshiva University, who was a profound thinker and a person who taught his students to be able to balance tradition with modernity, that what Rabbi Eliezer noticed about that incident, the conclusion of the story of Noah and the Ark, is that the world was being created a second time. Meaning that the first creation of the world, 601 years earlier, according to the Torah, with all of the animals and all of the birds and all of the roaming things and human beings, is wiped out. Completely wiped out with the flood. The flood destroys not only all life outside the ark, it brings back that tohu va-bohu, that mixture of land and water that was at once separated in creation, is now all together again. It's all chaos again. And finally, when the rains stop and the earth dries up, and Noah removes the covering from the ark and is able to go out on dry land, the world begins anew. It's a second chance. A second chance. A second chance. You know whose second chance? You know who got the second chance? God. Because God screwed up the first time. That's right. Why was the flood brought? Because the creature that God had made in the form of human beings went astray from what God believed the people needed to do and how they needed to live their lives. And it was God who decided, I've got to destroy that world and build it anew. Not with the descendants of Adam and Eve, but the descendants of Noah and his family. And notice Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the story of Noah's Ark is the story of a new creation, of the world being created a second time. That God took a second chance. And I'll prove it to you. What were the instructions given to the descendants of Adam and Eve, to Adam and Eve themselves? Vayomer lahem, God said to them, Vayomer lahem Elohim, God said to them, Peru urevu umilu et ha'aretz v'kivshuha. God says to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Conquer it. Kivshuha. Lichbosh is the term used for a military force and of occupation. The instruction to Adam and Eve and the descendants of humanity at that time was, I am giving you this earth, be fruitful, be multiply, and conquer it. Subdue it. But what does the Torah say God says to the descendants of Noah? Vayomer lahem, and God said to them, Peru urevu umilu et ha'aretz. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Stop. In other words, the Torah in this very subtle way is suggesting that God realized that a mistake was made the first time around. That in giving human beings the instructions that your role in this world is to conquer it, to occupy it in the sense of as if a military action, that is what led to the people going astray. That's what to the evil that dominated the earth. And so the second time around, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Peru urevu et ha'aretz umiluha, be fruitful, be multiplied, fill the earth. Stop. No longer conquering. I'll give you another example. An example of God taking a second chance. In Sefer Shemot, where the Ten Commandments appear, The Torah says, quoting God, Ani Hashem Elokecha El Kana. I am the Lord your God, who is a jealous God. El Kana. A jealous God. And that's the way the Bible's a transcendence, a correct translation. It means, I will not tolerate any of your variation. It's just me and me alone. And you better listen to me, you better do it this way or I will destroy you. I will punish you. I will bring you to exile. You will suffer. After the Ten Commandments, God no longer describes God's self as a jealous God, but rather with the words that we're going to sing on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The cantor will lead us in Adonai, Adonai, Erachum Vechanun, Erech Apayim, V'Rav Chesed V'Emet. God describes God's self as saying, the Lord your God is a gracious God filled with mercy and compassion, who will extend that mercy and compassion to the thousandth generation. Before the commandments, a jealous God, strict, justice. After the commandments, God took a second chance and said, you know, I better do it right this time. Let me invoke my character, my quality of compassion and mercy, instead of my compassion of strict justice and demand. You want another proof? What happened to the first set of commandments? They were broken. They were broken. The second time around, God says to Moshe, you've got to come back up to the mountain and make a new set of commandments. And you know, they're not exactly the same. Scholars will point out that although, and with the Roman numerals and the people in other Georgia that wanted on the Supreme Court, etc., if they really wrote out all the commandments and not just thou shalt not, ta 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 ta, but they really wrote them all out, and see, they're not the same. There's a variation. There's a change. Because God gave God's self a second chance. My friends, it's the evening of Rosh Hashanah. I want to tell you something. You know what this is, how a holiday is all about? When we conclude a one whole year and look back upon the things that we did, that some of which we're not so thrilled about. Rosh Hashanah is about giving ourselves a second chance. A second chance. Most of us do not really believe we have a second chance. What's most typical about ourselves is that when we think we've messed up, we just live with that guilt, that shame, that embarrassment, that pain. We may cover it up and hide it from others, but inside we are not forgiving. Inside we feel, I blew it. Rabbi Eliezer was trying to tell us in his commentary about Noah's Ark that Rosh Hashanah means we get a second chance. A second chance. A chance to do it better, if not right. To improve, if not become perfect. Rosh Hashanah gives us a second chance. Does that mean that there is an eradication of all the mistakes that we made in the year that has passed? No. On a computer, you can press delete, but in your guts and your heart and your soul, you can't delete. What you can do is put it in parentheses. What you can do is put it on the side. You can just put it in the drawer. And remember that a new year means a second chance. And that might be the reason that when Moses and the people of Israel left Mount Sinai and made their way to the promised land, they carried on the shoulders of Levium, they carried the ark. And what was inside the ark? The Ten Commandments, the two tablets. But not just two. There were four tablets. the two tablets that Moshe had fashioned in that second chance, and the broken ones that he had smashed at the foot of the mountain. In other words, we're told that we do carry what we have done. It's true. It doesn't leave us. It's not deleted. But there are new tablets tell us, despite those brokenness, there's a second chance. So I hope and pray that each and every one of us will start off these high holy days and realize that if God gets a second chance, so do we. If creation happened again, so can we recreate ourselves. If the characteristics that God acquired were too strict and changed to mercy and compassion, then we too can change. We're given a second chance. And here's what the Midrash says, with which I'd like to close. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, God said to the people of Israel, Banai, my children, if you turn this day, if you change from your ways, if you are different than what you have been, you will become new creatures, not the same people as before. Then will I consider you as if I have created you anew. And then shall you, being born anew, be as the new heavens and the new earth, which I have created on this day of creation. That's our opportunity. We have a new chance, a second chance. Let's make it good.